This is Paul Nobles from Eat Perform, and I am lucky to have Crystal. Crystal is one of the coaches here at Eat Perform. She is replacing Becky for the day. Becky's out doing awesome stuff and getting a little R&R in, I hope. She's probably not. She's probably like painting some building or something. But Crystal, did you want to say hi to everyone?
Good morning, everyone. We appreciate you guys taking out this time on a Saturday morning to hang out with us.
Yeah, and so for those that don't know, these are our lifetime clients, and we try to take this opportunity to go ahead and get some more advanced topics. So today we're going to talk a little bit about hormones, what to expect when you're doing hormones, and then some weight loss medication. And it's kind of interesting. I don't want every single podcast to be dominated by weight loss medication. And so hopefully that's going to be a real short piece of it. Actually, we could probably do a full hour on hormones alone. But before we do that, make sure that you have any questions that you have that you put into chat. And Crystal will read those out afterwards. If you can get them in as soon as possible, that would be great because it allows us to sort of adjust the main element. So if we see a lot of questions, we can go, okay, well, we can kind of do a little bit more Q&A. So this is meant to be like our, face-to-face time, right? So you've got Crystal and I, you can ask us any questions you want. So we really like to take those. So, all right, let's get into it. One of the things that I think happens, especially as people are becoming more aware, we're really making these hormone tests super accessible. Normally the tests that we're having people use will run anywhere from $500 to $800, kind of depending on any one particular thing that we're looking for, right? And so we actually sell them much cheaper than that so that everyone can have this information. So the question is, what do you do with this information? Because the simple fact of the matter is, you're going to get information that is going to be probably problematic, right? And I think that I'll walk you through what I did when I did my test, and why it took me a while to sort of think about it, right? And so in retrospect, I kind of regret that, but we'll go over that as well. So when you get the results for the blood test, there's going to be a lot of information, and it might be a little overwhelming. What I sort of like for people to do, so as an example, if you know that you're hormone deficient and you think that that's a problem, and you think that it hasn't been allowing you, weight loss over time, you're probably going to want to scratch that itch, right? I mean, like at the end of the day, if, like in my case, I found out when I was 39 that my free testosterone was at 10, which is on the low side, right, for a 40-year-old man. But I was like, you know what? Let's see what we can do here. And I started to get smarter about my nutrition. At that point, I had already lost all the weight. But I knew that I could build muscle. I knew that there was a lot of things. Now, in retrospect, if I was doing what I do now, I think I could have gained muscle a lot easier, especially as I was becoming smarter. Even early Eat Reform, when you're dealing with so many people, the level of information that you're getting and you can use is so helpful that it allows you just kind of these leaps in terms of the progress that you can make overall. Now, that progress sometimes would be a little bit frustrating. But, you know, basically what I found was after two or three tests that things had basically stayed the same for 10 years, which they didn't get demonstrably worse, right? But, you know, my workouts, all these things had just increased in a big, big way. And so what I, like I said, I kind of regret, the biggest reason I regret not doing it early on, or at least like 4 to 5 years earlier, is because I could have had more progress, right? And I could have really, I would have still had like a little bit of kind of the physiology working in my favor being younger. And so I didn't really start it. I think I was 49, maybe 50 when I started. I'm 55 now. And so that was kind of progress lost, right? And I think for many of you, you would have probably gone much farther down the path of, you know, your health equation than I had at 39. So I had to sort of figure some things out, right? The one thing I wish I had done, well, one, the blood test I got was from a doctor who, you know, wanted to kind of pump me full of meds, which, you know, some of those meds I am on now, right? So blood pressure, well, we didn't have blood pressure. I didn't have blood pressure issues at that time, but I believe there might have been like some cholesterol stuff. There was certainly hormone stuff. I'm gonna take back the cholesterol. It was really just the hormones that was kind of working in my favor. But what the full panel that we do kind of would have enlightened me to some of the supplements I could have been taking. You know, I wouldn't have been taking creatine at that time. I, you know, wasn't smart about vitamin D. There were just a lot of things that I just was not yet aware of. And so being more aware with these tests, with the ability to kind of take this proactive approach, I think it could have made a really big difference, right? Now, how does, you know, this is kind of the big question. The big motivator is, let's be real, you know, many people want to lose weight and they feel like their hormones are the reason why they're not losing weight. Early on, I can tell you that when you start to take hormones, you will not lose weight, right? Because a lot of what is being fixed, whatever deficiencies you have, right? Like, you know, estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, almost all of those, as you start to fix them, is going to kind of trigger this stuff in your body that wasn't working, or that you would kind of, you know, maybe cause the problem with chronic dieting or excessive dieting or constantly working out or all these different types of things, right? So, and then of course, there's the natural state of things where nature is just doing nature things and it's taking away some of the things that would have been positive. Now those things are back in place. So there's going to be a light layer of inflammation and a layer of weight loss, like weight gain. Usually, you know, we can keep that somewhat reasonable, but let me give you an example. If your body naturally wants to be somewhere in the 130 range, right? And then you are trying to stay 110. Is it possible that you can put on some muscle that could get you to 120 that actually changes your physique very positively? Absolutely. You know, if you've been deficient for a long time, this is sort of the basis for like insulin sensitivity and insulin resistance, insulin sensitivity being the good thing, right? And so as you start to regain some of that insulin sensitivity, what happens is that your body now starts to use those hormones more efficiently. And so you are able to build lean mass, and maybe you're now stopping some of the damage that you would have been doing. The big thing, this is my biggest regret. What seems like an inconvenience is actually a plus. It's similar to going to the dentist, right? You don't love it, and occasionally you have to get a cavity filled or something of this nature. But if you let it go for years and years and years, it just becomes worse. And then you're getting root canals and all this other type of stuff. That's my biggest regret, is that I wish that I had gone through a men's health clinic or something similar to what Eduform Health is, because what the doctors are doing is kind of addressing some of the deficiencies as it relates to what medication you could be on. So, as an example, doctors are not really going to prescribe you testosterone as a general rule. When they do, you have to, this is the way it works for most insurances or doctors are going to be reluctant to have you be on various things that proactively a service like the referral service we use is going to be a little bit more proactive. That's just the best way to say it. I don't want to get too into what doctors do, what doctors don't do, and things of this nature. You know what they do, right? You know your hormones might be problematic, and they're not willing to help you because, frankly, the list of things that they do is just not in that list, right? They're more trying to react to whatever the problem is, and then kind of plug that dam. I'm super pro doctor, so much so that I'm telling you that if you're part of Eduform Health, one of the big advantages is that you have to go to the doctor a fair amount, right? You're getting your blood checked a fair amount. And so all of this is proactive, and all of this allows for you to just be more cognizant of your health overall, right? So you could probably expect a little bit of weight gain. The other thing that I think that you're going to find is that there is no, here's your four things, you're fixed now, right? There is a balance one way or the other, because as you start to do this, now this changes, so you have to react to it. One of the issues with testosterone is that it's kind of known to mess with your blood pressure. So now I have to be on blood pressure medication. I probably would have had to be on blood pressure medication no matter what. It's sort of hard though, because everyone in my family who is on blood pressure medication, none of them are working towards a level of fitness that I have. So it's sort of hard. It's the whole, high blood pressure runs in the family. It's like, no, nobody runs in your family thing. And literally no one in my family is physically active ever or at all, and they're all medicated for every single thing, and the doctor tells them whatever they want, whatever they have, and they take it, right? And they never sit there and think. And in retrospect, there are some things that, I wish I listened to a little bit earlier, like the hormone thing. I made a big deal of it. Really, really wasn't that big of a deal. I was just trying to stay off of medication as long as possible. No real regrets in that regard, but I think taking a little bit, knowing that, if you're hypothyroid, being reluctant to be on that, to me was a mistake on my part. And I'm willing to say that. In terms of statins, I feel like a lot of that can be affected by diet. But once again, currently my cholesterol is fine. It has been fine. It's ticked up a little bit occasionally. It was bad, obviously, when I was unfit. I feel like I have a lot of control over that in what I eat, right? So, but I've never really had those issues, so that really hasn't been super problematic. But my point is that you're not going to have like these black and white answers, right? And you have to be okay with the gray. The other part, and I think that this is something that everybody needs to take into account. Once you start on hormones, you're kind of on hormones for life, right? Now, can you get off? Absolutely. You can 100% get off, but you are going to go back to the miserable part that kind of caused you to go to hormones in the first place. So you, when you make the decision to be use hormones or be on hormones, you have to also then make sure that you're willing to do the work, right? And you're willing to go to the doctor and all these various things. And so somebody has an open mic, and I'm going to try and mute that. So there we go. Okay, everybody's muted now. So I want you to keep that in mind, but not as a negative thing. Like I said, I probably would have started early on if I had done it through a men's clinic. I would have probably used more natural supplements to see what I could affect. And my guess is that would have sent me in the direction within 2 to 5 years of being on hormone replacement, right? And so I know for women, there was a stigma for a long time related to menopause and things of this nature, and don't, try to affect that even as you're being miserable, even as you're suffering through depression and all the different things that can affect you through menopause. The science on that, isn't strong, right? Addressing that change, I think, is something that is fairly smart. But once again, it's not a cure-all, And I try to tell all of you this because I want you to walk into it knowing, like, think about it. You go to the gym every day, you go to the doctor, you eat healthy, all these different things. You've made these great interventions in your life, and this is just another intervention that is a piece of that intervention, right? So, like I talked about it in the last podcast, but that's the reason why we have meals. That's the reason why we have we have meals, we have hormones, and then obviously the nutrition. And so and then for meals, just so everybody knows, I don't have any problem with people knowing this, but our lifetime clients actually get a discount on the meals. So if you don't know that, and you are a lifetime and you wonder, like, why well, don't I want to try meals, but I need kind of a reason to push me over, reach out to customer service, and they can get you the lifetime. You have to be lifetime, of course. And so if you're not lifetime, you reach out to customer service, they're going to tell you, well, you're not like that, right? But we do, at least once a month, we do offer a discount for those people as well. So I think for the most part, that's really about what it is. Would I do it again? 100%. 100%. I think that. A lot of the things. Now, is it costly? It's not inexpensive, right? I mean, I know for me, I would say it's probably $4,000 to $5,000 overall for my hormones a year, but I'm also much more I am probably a little bit more aggressive than many of you are, just from the standpoint of I want to try various peptides and stuff like this to see how it affects me so then I can report about it to you. And so, like as an example, BPC-157 as a recovery agent. Definitely saw some progress with that. Would I do it again? I don't know that I would do it again, to be completely honest with you. Because I think the extent of the healing for me was probably a little bit more than just kind of like casual healing, right? And so, but I've literally not heard that many people say. I think when I was on it originally, I was dosing way too low and they were being too conservative and we never adjusted it. And so that's where being in communication with your coordinator. I know many people, when we were working with our previous referral network, one of the reasons why we changed is so that we could, one, dictate the process with the new referral network where there's more communication and better communication. And we obviously have kind of our liaison that sort of helps that Sarah Carlson. I know many of you on this call probably have been in touch with her. I'm just really proud of that evolution. I really feel like it completes the puzzle for Eat to Perform. And it will complete the puzzle for all of you. And I think that, if cost is a consideration, there's nothing wrong with aging appropriately, right? Certainly, I'm not going to make that argument, but it's sort of like quality of food, right? So I used to get asked a lot, and people would go, "Hey, Paul, what do you spend on groceries?" And the answer is as much as I can, right? I'm ingesting something into my body. I want it to be as high a quality as I can afford. When I think about medicine in general, that's a medicine that to me is highly important. And the fact that we have that piece in place with Eat Perform Meals, I pretty much exclusively eat Perform Meals, and then every now and again, I'll get a little bored and DoorDash something or something of that nature, but that's like once every couple of weeks. I mean, it's just so convenient to have those meals in place. So before we get into weight loss medication, which should be very short, by the way, I did see a couple questions go through. Crystal, did you want to read those out and then I can talk about those?
Definitely. So Sarah has a three-part question. We'll start off with the first one. For ETP clients that are using weight loss meds, are you seeing them get off after AP? Social media is riddled with posts of people staying on indefinitely. Granted, they are not ETP clients.
So I would like to address that in the next part when we talk about weight loss medication.
Okay. The second question, assuming clients are getting off weight loss meds, which this kind of rolls into that first question as well, are they staying as weight stable as they might have done in fat loss cycles without the meds? I suppose this pertains to a particular subset of clients who've been with Eat to Perform long enough to have done a fat loss cycle without meds and with meds.
So I'll answer that. I think the answer is you should expect some weight gain. In terms of weight stable, I'm not a huge fan of clinching on to a weight and having that be, the end all be all. I think that there has to be some flexibility sort of built in. What I sort of suggest to people is that, if you're, let's say just as a random number, let's say you're trying to lose 20 pounds, probably overshoot it to 25, right? And that to me is kind of a bigger advantage. And sometimes, we haven't talked about this a lot, but this is something that I think this group can handle or deal with, right? You can actually order more. And there is potential for maybe dosing a little bit higher just to sort of get to that level. That's something you would talk to your doctor about. We're not the doctors, right? But I do think that that's something that people can add into the mix if that's of interest to them. Once again, like the I'll talk a little bit more about it. All this is really doing is helping you with the discomfort of being hungry all the time, right? I mean, it's not magic, it's not, we'll talk maybe a little bit about like the insulin sensitivity, but people are like, oh no, the thing, it's not the eating less, 100%. It's the insulin sensitivity. No, it's 100% the eating less, right? That is causing the weight loss. Insulin sensitivity, actually, this is interesting, would only affect you once you get off of the medication. So like, as an example, some of that weight that you will gain because of the regained insulin sensitivity will be positive and will allow you to build more muscle, hold on to nutrients a little bit better. So you're storing more muscle, not fat necessarily, right? So there's a lot of positive to insulin sensitivity, but none of those positives happen when you're starving, right? And what happens for people that are chronically under eating is that there gets to a point where there's no benefit to insulin sensitivity, and actually the insulin resistance can become worse as a result. Now we're talking about long periods of time. We can address that. I will say we're seeing more and more science that talks about the fact that there was an original study, and the original study. So people talk about the fact that like weight loss medications, they're so new, they're not new, right? Like GLP-1s in some shape or form have been around for a long time, but even like something like Ozempic, and I would say Mounjaro also, though I don't know the exact date of Mounjaro. But I believe Ozempic started for diabetics like 7 years ago, and it obviously got hot once people realized the benefits of the weight loss medication piece of it, or the ability to blunt. Not Ozempic is a diabetic medication, right? Wegovy is the brand that is for weight loss medication. So at the time they were doing these studies, it didn't really occur to them that people would get off of it because they needed it to be treated for diabetes, right? And so that study sort of showed something that I think is really interesting, is one of the hallmarks of eat to perform. What that study showed was that you're going to hit a wall, right? So why do you hit a wall? Why is it, I believe Ozempic's 15, and I think Mounjaro's 18. Ozempic is semaglutide. Ozempic, Wegovy is semaglutide. Mounjaro's Zepbound is tirzepatide. Why do you hit the wall? Well, you hit the wall because at a certain point, you can't just eat less all the time, right? And so your body is going to downgrade and start to protect you, right? A lot of people call this starvation mode. That's not really what's going on. You're not necessarily starving. In a lot of cases, people are eating, right? But your body, there are limits to weight loss, which is why you should be doing it in cycles. But what they pretty clearly showed is not only if you, it, so you do it, Let's say so only type 2 diabetics right now are being approved. You can ask for a special compensation or dispensation or whatever. The amount of people being approved in that scenario, one, unless you're severely obese, it's just not going to happen, right? This is coming from my doctor who, his bosses told him, don't even ask, right? Because we just can't waste our insurance people. It's too much red tape, unless someone's like severely overweight, we're not going to be able to get them through. So you had these people that were on this very long time. Okay. We also found that the longer you on it, the more you are predisposed to thyroid cancer, right? So that's another reason to view it cyclical. And so I think that a lot of people that are using it or were using it as a way to, and this always sounds crass. I'm not trying to be crass. I'm just trying to give an example that people understand. A lot of people aren't doing it the way that everybody here is doing it, with a lot of support and a lot of interest in macros and all these different things and reverse dieting. A lot of people are doing it just to eat less pizza, right? Or less processed foods or less, soda or things of this nature. And so they're on TikTok like middle finger, to, hey, you know what? I'm on this. I'm fine. No big deal. Not realizing that, one, the longer you're on it, well, that's the other thing, right? The longer you're on it, the more you're going to see muscle wasting. So now not only are you having all these risk factors go up, you were trying to positively affect things, and now we've kind of changed the things that are negative for you, right? And so now you're aging prematurely because you have less muscle, you're going to be more at risk for, things like osteoporosis. And oh, by the way, there's side effects, right? And if your insurance isn't paying for it, it's a mortgage payment. Now, it is much cheaper as you go through compound pharmacies. We talked about that in the other podcast. You can go back and listen to that. But basically, when medications are at a shortage, one of the ways that they address that is by allowing compound pharmacies to have access to the main active ingredient. And so that, the companies don't love that, because it provides a layer of competition. They would rather keep the price as high as possible, right? And so without the compound pharmacies as some layer of competition, the price for this stuff could be astronomical, right? And so going through our referral network, you'll see that, for a 3 month supply, it for a lot of people, it just ends up being around the copay. So that's the argument for weaning, right? That's the argument. And oh, by the way, I feel like the discussion that we're having right now is a 6 month ago discussion. And everything was viewed from a diabetic lens at that point. And now we're starting to see the effects of Wegovy. And so because of the effects of Wegovy, we're seeing a lot of people wanting to get off the medications. And so this is just going to end up being the weight loss medication part, because I'm just going so in depth into it. But what basically people are seeing is that people do want to get off of it. They probably should expect some weight gain. I mean, we're talking about staying in a deficit for a really long time. That insulin sensitivity, like I said, possibly going to build positive tissue in your body, not necessarily always going to be fat, so that's a positive. I think that what we're going to find is that cyclical use as it relates to weight loss medication. I think this is the same for type 2 diabetics, but I'm not a doctor. I'm just giving you my opinion. I think that if you are using this to control your blood sugars, using it cyclically, and then maybe moving to another type of medication that allows your appetite to come back, your muscle to come back, and less risk of thyroid cancer, all these things, all those things are positive, right? There are other things that control the reason why these medications are so popular is because of the hunger blunting, right? There are other medications that control blood sugars, right? So keep that in mind as we're kind of having these discussions. But I do think you should expect some weight gain. I do think that the habits and information that we're giving you is going to be much better than, think about it. Like once again, not trying to be crass, just trying to explain it in a way that people understand. You use it to eat less pizza. You come off of it. What are you going to crave? Pizza, right? You're going to crave, and it's not just the pizza. It's what the pizza represents. The pizza represents hypocaloric type of foods, like processed foods. If you had avoided alcohol, or like it seems like with tirzepatide, people do feel the results of alcohol. Semaglutide, they might not. Some of that you might want to research, but this is fairly common. I know when I was on semaglutide, I just had no want for coffee. So they kind of work differently, right? I think some of that stuff's gonna come out. I haven't heard the coffee thing. I haven't heard the alcohol thing with tirzepatide. Doesn't mean it's not happening, but we have enough people that are using tirzepatide also where I would know. And frankly, you're going to deal with a fair amount of lethargy, right? So having the ability to copy that would be maybe a little bit of an argument for tirzepatide in that instance. But the answer to the first question was the first question, the weight gain, or it was the weaning. It was the weaning, right? Yeah.
Yes.
So I feel like I addressed that fairly well. If I didn't, go ahead and ask another question. So I know she asked another one. What was the other question she asked?
Okay, the third one also ties into the very last question that we have. She's wanting to know the difference in the time frame for fat loss cycles while on the meds. And then if a client is using weight loss meds, seeing bigger movement in the scale and doing fat loss cycles for longer, does this mean you don't need to do fat loss too?
So I literally did a whole podcast on this last time. The podcast that we did on Thursday covered this, but here's the long and short of it. Don't think of it like, so yes, if you reach your weight goal, or if you were trying to lose 20 pounds, but you did what I said and you lost 25 to 30 pounds so that you have like a little bit of a cushion or a buffer. Like I said, in my mind, you might want to lose 20 pounds, but in reality, with the regaining of insulin sensitivity and stuff like that, that might look a little bit more like 15. You might look in the mirror and see, some positive things, even if, let's say that you lost 25 and then you went back to 15. What I think that a lot of people are going to find is that, let's just use 3 months as an example, which is sort of the vials that most of you are going to be using. So you reach that goal, right? You learn a few things, maybe a few missteps along the way, and you take a 6 to 9 month break. My guess is that's not going to be the only time you ever use it, and that's okay, right? So how would you view that? Is that fat loss one and then a 6 month break and then fat loss two? Maybe, right? But the basic concept of Eat to Perform is constructed right there, right? Where, you know, the only reason why we have the 6 week cycles and the AP and then another 6 week cycle comes to diet adherence. What you're doing with weight loss medication is you're allowing for better diet adherence because you have your hunger blunted, right? And so the basis for your questions seems to be, can I lose my weight and never do another fat loss cycle again? And that answer is no. And I think you know that, right? I think everybody sort of knows that. Now, once again, you can up your effort. You can do a lot of different things. But at the end of the day, I think that we all have to look at this the way it actually is, that you're going to want some level of maintenance along the way, whether that be 6 months from now, whether that be, you know, 2 years from now, whether that be 5 years from now. You know, I went 7 years without doing fat loss. No regrets either, right? You know, the more you try to stay a certain weight, the more negatively you're affecting your metabolic. That's just fact, right? Now, that doesn't mean that you aren't affecting other parts of your health more positively, right? That could be true. But, you know, kind of having this tight, you know. But I did go over literally every scenario. That was the short version. Literally listen to the other podcast that I'm going to upload on either Sunday or Monday. I don't know if you're here for the alarms that I set, but I still need to upload it. But it really goes over in great length the exact question that you just asked, because it is, there's a lot of consideration. Was that it for the questions? Or?
That is it for the questions.
Okay, so, well, I appreciate her contribution because that added a lot. I think that the thing I am most proud of right now is that I don't feel like we have any holes in our game. But what I do feel is that there is a level of, like, I think we are optimized as much as possible for the general population. Now, are we going to be working with bikini competitors? That was actually a big piece of the last podcast, where I talked about that a fair amount. You know, could you in theory? Sure. You know, we don't tend to want that business just because we've had competitors, just don't get me wrong, right? But we've literally said to them, look, if you're going to want one of these 12-month diet cycles and stuff like that, you know, we're just not your place, right? And so I think that's something that people need to keep in mind. But in terms of general population, once again, you know, if you're eating ramen, struggling to get by, you know, unfortunately, these are not going to be services that you can afford right now. But at my age, for many of us, we're trying to optimize our health. You know, these are great options, and I want the world to have those. And oh, by the way, we give out so much free information to all the people that want to do it and can't afford to do it with a coach or with hormones or all these other things. But, my biggest regrets is not that I took so long to get on it. My biggest regrets is that I took so long to get the right information, right? If all along the way I was getting that information and that information was staying roughly the same as I was kind of doing what I was doing, I would have been fine with that. But, you get to this place where, and I wish I had gotten to it earlier. I mean, I was very interested in data, but I wasn't as great with the doctor. I was way better than the average person. I'll just, put that out there just to be clear. But I wasn't having, yearly physicals. I'd probably have a physical every 2 to 3 years, things of that nature. So I do have regrets that I didn't get on it sooner. Once again, it is a luxury for people that can't afford it. So kind of keep that in mind. I am seeing one question kind of coming in late, and then we'll answer that. And then as long as there's no follow-ups, we will jump off and do Saturday.
Okay, there's actually two questions that came in. Stephanie's question, this would be good for her coach, but if we have a couple of clients that are in the same boat, I think that this would be a good one for you to answer. Is it possible to see fat loss progress with ETP hormones and weight loss meds if I'm not able to work out aggressively due to an injury?
I mean, I would argue that, I mean, as long as, you had sort of built up kind of the runway and things of that nature. I don't know what the injury is, maybe you could say that. But there really isn't any injury that your whole body is affected, right? It's typically either upper body or lower body, so you can find a skier, But I think what you're really asking, and what I think, so ankle injury, yeah. So you probably want to do a skier, but there's a lot of things that you can do body weight wise. I literally like pulled the ankle off of my leg in a motorcycle accident, and my recovery from that was really quick, and the reason why was because I really pushed the physical therapy side, and I was really diligent about that, and I took that very seriously, and that helped my healing quite a bit. But there was a time I would not have said this, but it's very clear now, right? That weight loss in general, is going to be more of a factor than you're working out. People want to believe that, like, oh, everybody's working out so hard. And we're doing things that the great majority of people aren't. But it's not a chicken and egg thing, right? Or in a way it is a chicken and egg thing, right? Where once you start to get healthy, you're like, okay, I did this and now this great thing happened. Let's see if I do this and this other great thing happens. I know for myself, I was working out quite a bit and I had to pull back a lot. You would be shocked. I mean, other than, I'm playing pickleball 2 hour sessions, maybe 3 hour sessions once a week. And at 3 hours a week, 3 days a week, some days I do four. But I need to for my recovery and for my body to heal because it really takes a so I am I an extreme exerciser? No chance, right? And so the calorie deficit is of way more value to you than whatever push-up routine you could do. That said, right, you do want to preserve muscle, right, in that process, and it does have some value there. But there are lots of things you can do. You can do push-ups, you can do pull-ups, you can do skiing, so don't limit rowing. I know you think you, if you've ever been to any CrossFit gym ever, you know that people have ankle injuries and they are rowing, right? They just put their little boot on the top of the thing and they're good to go, right? So just try and challenge yourself to be really smart about the PT and really smart about, doing the activity you can, and don't just, give yourself a pass for 3 months. But yeah, not only do I think it, not only do I think it works, I did it. I did it for probably 50 of the pounds that I lost. I was in a chair, with a gigantic cast because my ankle literally was on the street, right? It was kind of that way, right? So, yeah, 100% you can do it. And I can tell you that, when I left that time, I mean, like, whenever I think back of it, I think of it like I hear Rocky music, you know what I mean? It was like such a motivational time in my life, and I never really had ever worked that hard before.
Okay, the next question. Any advice to using HRT to regain muscle resulting from surgery and atrophy?
So yes, it'll happen much faster, right? Think about, so like as an example, what I just talked about, and I really hope that my computer doesn't die. But I am getting messages saying low battery, and since we're already at the end, but think about if you've ever broken your leg, right? You're in a cast. You have that flabby leg, and then you have your muscle leg, and then usually within 2 to 3 months, it all comes back. HRT will just help that process, right? HRT, depending on what you're doing, the various peptides that can help healing, things of that nature. But a lot of that just comes down to your body is trying to hold your muscle. So it is going to allow some of that's insulin sensitivity. I think there's a little bit more at work. There is this idea, I talk about it a lot. People refer to muscle loss, right? And I don't believe that they're losing muscle. I think a lot of it is just the it's hydration, right? It's does your is there more water needed on your good leg than your bad leg, right? And so, did you lose tissue? I'm sure you did lose some tissue, but it's going to come back with a vengeance once you start using it, once you start being able to work out, things of this nature. But like I said, I mean, virtually every, by the way, virtually every professional athlete that gets caught using performance enhancing drugs, is doing so to. So they can get back on the ball field and order and make the millions of dollars, right? They're not doing it necessarily to gain an advantage most of the time. Sometimes they are, but a lot of times they're just trying to heal injuries, right? Because they're chronically injured, right? They just that whole process is problematic, And so, but the answer is very clearly yes. All right, we're gonna stop there. Great questions. I appreciate everybody's contribution. And I hope this helps because I think that a lot of people have a lot of questions about hormone therapy. I'm obviously an advocate, but I'm not one of these advocates that won't tell you the truth, right? And so hopefully that helps everybody and allows them to make a more informed decision. Talk to you later. Bye now.